Prepare to be astonished.
It's that time again.
Let's get started.
From the Clatsop County Historical Society, an adventure in history with Matt Burns and Alana Quila.
You should never be allowed to talk to people.
Some people without brains do an awful lot of talking.
And now, with today's adventure, it's Mac and Alana.
Hello, hello. We are in the dog days of summer, Mac.
It is definitely woof, woof, woof.
It is.
Dog days.
So much so. Enjoying all the outdoor stuff and indoor stuff. And
you've been traveling.
Traveling, I have, yes. The girls and I went on an adventure to Lost Lake.
Was it an adventure?
It really was.
Did you find the lake?
I found it. I did not get lost, which could not be said for all of the people in my party.
So, sounds like a story.
Yes, it is a story.
And I was just going to say, the lake is not lost anymore.
Nope, the lake's not lost. We found it. But part of us did. But before that, I have a little story.
No, you got a story.
About
I like stories.
About the dog days of summer.
Oh, okay.
This was my segue. Mm-hmm. So the Romans called them the Canicula Res Dies, which translates into the dog days, or more commonly known, the hottest days of summer. According to Roman beliefs, Sirius, the dog of Roman astrology, and the brightest star in the sky for a period of 8 weeks from July 3rd to August 11th.
Sounds like the middle of the summer.
Yeah, it rose daily with the sun. So along with the sun, Sirius shone brightly throughout the dog days. So the intense heat during this period was ascribed not only to the heat of the sun, but to the intense brightness of the dog star as well. The ancient use of the term dog days for the heat waves of summer, although unscientific, dispels the modern idea that dogs suffer from the heat more readily than humans, the more common attribution for this phrase. So dog days of summer.
See, if you had quizzed me, I was going to guess that, I know that dogs don't really get bothered, that's not why they're panting in that sense, that it had to do with the myth of that.
Yes.
I would not have guessed that it was Romans.
Dog days of summer.
Those crazy Romans.
Enjoy it.
Okay. Do you think anybody really uses that phrase anymore that's under the age of 30?
Oh, definitely not. No.
Under the age of 40.
I mean, I'm sure my daughter's eyes would like glisten over. What are you even saying, Mom?
Yes.
Dog days.
Yeah. I think that's one that'll disappear. Eventually.
Oh, well, that's true.
Yeah.
Oh, I hadn't thought about words that are likely to disappear or phrases.
Yeah.
Yeah. Meanwhile, words like sus and bruh.
Yeah, those aren't going to survive.
Oh, my gosh.
Those are going to disappear, thankfully.
Thankfully.
But things like roll up the window in your car, even though how many cars, unless they're classic cars, actually have a roll up.
I know.
So we still use that.
That's true.
Or video something.
I was one of those people that I asked specifically for the hand rolling up to do it manually in my car until now they don't do it at all.
I was going to say, can you do that?
You can't. Up until, second car, I think maybe even my third, I could still get that. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I didn't like automatic windows.
No, I hate them.
And they break, and then I have the fear of them being stuck when I need to get out, right? So
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I totally agree. I want that to be manual.
Right. Maybe my kids.
But of course, you make me now want to do my rant about, like, my car got hit.
I know.
I'm not going to name the insurance company, but I would like to. The person that hit me, their insurance company is not doing well by me.
I know. It's so awful.
Yeah. They're paying me. It's a new car. It's less than 12 years old, 12 months old. And when I said it's a new car, they said, no, it isn't. It's last year's car. It's like, it's new to me.
It's a one-year-old. It's
and
a baby.
I want to take it back to the dealer, and they're telling me they won't pay for it if I take it back to the dealer.
Right.
So.
Or even reverse or reimburse at cost at the dealer.
Yeah.
I mean, that seems like a reasonable request, too.
No, they said the dealer's too expensive, and we have other approved.
Right. Oh.
Yeah. Yeah. So if anybody wants to know, just ask me, because I'll tell you off the air. Because I will badmouth this insurance company, anybody at this point.
Max rants and raves.
They did not care. They were not helpful.
Well, no, they're following an algorithm, right? And like a little chart.
It's very disappointing. And worse, the person that hit me tried to drive away.
Yeah. When you said she truly had no clue.
And had no idea.
I mean, it wasn't even she was being
She smashed my driver's side mirror. I was parked and drove past and smashed her own mirror. And just kept driving, and I had to chase her for like a block and a half, flashing my lights and honking my horn. And then she's like, what happened? I know. And I was like, you hit my car.
You said she was not rude about it. I mean, she just was clueless.
No, she was very perplexed.
Yes.
She's like, my mirror smashed. I was like, because you hit my car.
Which makes you wonder about some other things. But,
so, yes. Yeah. Ask me what insurance company I use and ask me what insurance company I'm very unhappy with right now.
Yes. Okay. We will. Off the air.
All right. Off the air. All right. But we should get to the big history highlights.
Yeah.
These are things that happen tomorrow, July 21st. And I'm going to have a lot of tangents and side notes here.
Okay.
I don't have a lot of things, but I do have a lot of side stuff.
This is just what you're feeling right now. Let's go for it.
Yeah. July 21st, 1861, the first Battle of Bull Run did not go well for the North.
Okay.
But that is very timely because I'm reading Eric Larson's book, The Demon of Unrest. Mm. Eric Larson, very good historian, even though he doesn't like footnote stuff. He does have like where his sources come from, but he's a great storyteller. And I've actually heard him speak publicly. He was at a conference I went to once. Very entertaining. He's the Devil in the White City guy and a whole bunch of other books. But mm-hmm. The Demon of Unrest is about the beginning of the Civil War. Firing on Fort Sumner and the folks in South Carolina being the first ones to secede. And he talks about why that is. And it's just such a great reminder as he's quoting different sources as one by one before Lincoln even takes the oath of office by one that these states secede from the Union. And anyone who would like to foolishly attempt to argue it was all about states' rights, oh my gosh, just it's such a nice reminder of every time and all of their letters and their diaries, they all talk about it's slavery. It's about slavery. It's right. About slavery.
So, very well documented.
Yeah. So anyway, first Battle of Bull Run, Civil War.
Okay.
And there's my commercial for Eric Larson's book, The Demon of Unrest.
Yeah. Oh,
okay. So if anybody wants to borrow it after I'm done, I'll give it to him.
Okay.
All right. 1865, Wild Bill Hickok fights in what might be the first quick draw Western shootout.
Ooh.
When he shoots Dave Tutt dead in the Market Square of Springfield, Missouri. So I don't know if I've gone on this rant on the air or not, but you know, the idea of high noon, two cowboys standing in the middle of the dusty street and draw and they pull their guns, that almost never happened. You just shoot somebody in the gut in the middle of gambling or the casino, or you'd wait outside and shoot them in the back. I mean, that idea. That happened all the time. Oh, my goodness. But this was actually one of the times where it really did happen.
Was a shootout.
They stood out there. And so Wild Bill Hickok, a skilled gunman with a formidable reputation, was eking out a living as a professional gambler in Springfield, Missouri. He quarreled with Dave Tutt, a former Confederate soldier, but it is unclear what caused the dispute. Some people say it was over a card game, while others say they fought over a woman. Whatever the cause, the two men agreed to a duel. Hmm. The showdown took place the following day with a crowd of onlookers watching as Hickok and Tutt confronted each other from opposite sides of the town square. When Tutt was about 75 yards away, Hickok shouted, "Don't come any closer, Dave." Tutt nervously drew his revolver and fired a shot that went wild. Hickok, by contrast, remained cool. He steadied his own revolver in his left hand and shot Tutt dead with a bullet through the chest.
And are you not allowed to move?
Yeah, you could. I mean, an official duel like from earlier, like what Andrew Jackson did, you know, no, those you were supposed to stand there and just
wait it out. Yep. Oh, man.
So having adhered to the Code of the West, Hickok was acquitted of manslaughter charges. But of course, 11 years later, he gets shot in the back.
When he's Code gambling. Of the West. Yeah. Man.
Okay. All right. So I almost was thinking of making that the history highlight, but that's not the reason we all think of the Old West having these gunfights.
Right.
So,
okay.
1899, Ernest Hemingway is born.
Okay. Pretty good. I like his writing.
Do you?
Yeah. It's very simple and, stands the test of time.
Okay.
Not my favorite books, of course. Yes. But, yeah, no, his style's, it's one to be learned from.
1951, Robin Williams is born. I lied. Yes. Is there people out there who don't like Robin Williams?
I don't know. Probably not.
Yeah, and especially with the mental health, even more. Yes. Kind of like the you feel badly for the struggles that he was going through. 1972, comedian George Carlin is arrested for his infamous seven dirty words routine.
Oh.
Charges were dropped, but a later complaint about a broadcast of his act would propel the issue of indecent speech to the Supreme Court.
You're going to always remember this now.
Yes, yeah. Somehow that comes up kind of frequently.
Ever since I told you and you had no idea we were not allowed to say those words.
Yeah. 1996, The Daily Show, a late night talk show and satirical news program hosted by Craig Kilborn, premieres on Comedy Central.
I don't even remember him.
Yeah, he was the one before Jon Stewart.
Okay.
I don't think there was anybody in between them. But I kind of thought The Daily Show had kind of a big impact.
It does. I mean,
so I thought about that one as well. Whether you're a fan or not, still had
right.
an impact.
Yeah, it's different for sure.
2011, NASA's final space shuttle mission comes to an end with the Shuttle Atlantis.
Okay.
I miss the space shuttle.
I know you do. All the space stuff. And what year was that?
2011.
Okay. Yeah. So. I know.
But our history highlight of the day, thing I think had the most impact, and I don't have enough written to really defend it if I have to. Though I just know it's come up often enough that I know it's true. 1853, Central Park in New York City is created when the New York State Legislature puts aside more than 750 acres of land on Manhattan Island, the first landscaped public park in the U.S. Oh. It's designed by Frederick Law Olmsted and Calvert Vaugh. It has become a world-class destination and a masterpiece of landscape architecture. So everybody who has ever dabbled in landscape architecture knows that name, Frederick Law Olmsted.
Okay.
And apparently it had a huge impact. Now, he didn't invent the whole idea because he took some ideas from Europe. But it's not – you don't just make a fountain. You make everything work together.
Right.
And that was kind of a new concept in the United States.
Well, sure, especially so, huge in impact. A metropolitan area. Mm-hmm. And I would never actually have guessed that that was the first one.
Yeah.
Even though it's so massive in size. But the fact, too, that it has stood the test of time.
Yeah, I love Central Park.
And hasn't been removed. I mean, that would be huge to have lost that, I think, for that city.
Yeah. The last time I took my whole family to New York City, we allowed each one of us chose one thing to do because mm-hmm. we didn't have all the time in the world. And my son wanted to go to the Central Park Zoo.
Oh, I love that.
We're like, really? You got lots of choices. You could do this. You could do that. And we're almost like trying to talk him out of it.
But did you do it?
Yeah, we did.
Okay.
Yeah. So that's my history highlight of the day. Did I miss anything?
You didn't. No. Mm-hmm. So I thought we'd talk a little bit about my trip.
Yeah.
It was an adventure. So let me start by saying that this was every summer we go on a big family camping trip, like our whole family. Last year there was like 22 of us, I think, that went. So it's like, you know, multiple generations, multiple relatives.
And for the record, that's nuts, but go ahead.
It is and it isn't. I mean, as a mom, there's something about camping with other moms and other people to help watch your kids and cook your meals.
Spread the responsibility. I'm down with that.
So Lost Lake came up, and it was this actually, I blame my dad because it was on his bucket list because he recalls us going as a family 30 plus years ago. Yeah. I know. And we'd go day trips because we lived in Portland. We lived out in Troutdale. So just there in the gorge, we'd drive over to Hood River and then up to Lost Lake. So really easy little trip. And you were in the middle of nowhere. I mean, Lost Lake is adequately named. Mm-hmm. It's actually an hour from Hood River, but probably as the crow flies, it's like, it's not very far, but it is up the side of the mountain surrounded by nothing.
And when you're Dad remember taking you. Do you remember going?
I do remember.
Were you so young that you don't remember?
No, I remember because I was 10 and younger. I mean, so yeah. So I remember and I just remember it being Beautiful Lake. So I planned this trip, rented all these. We did glamping. So cabins. They have 8 cabins there. That's it. Mm-hmm. None of them have indoor plumbing. So no sinks, no toilets, you know, all those fun things that my kids just like gasped at when they walked in and they're like, where's the bathroom? Oh, it's a pit toilet down the road, kids. In the end, everyone canceled for one reason or another. So one family went on a cruise. I know, hard to pick. We're like, what do we do? We go on the cruise. My dad got injured, so he couldn't go. So then all of a sudden, it was down to 5 of us. So my girls, my cousin, and one of my best friends. And so we make this fun.
You could each have your own cabin.
Right. No, I canceled all the cabins. We had one cabin. I'm like, okay, we can do this, right? Like, we're going in the middle of nowhere. We're going to bring our boats, all this. Plan to meet out there. She never makes it. never makes it. My dear friend, and I won't name her because she's quite resourceful. but she got lost, and so it was quite ironic. And we did have a harrowing kind of first day and night because I was very worried that, you know, she was like off the side of a mountain somewhere, right? Like, I mean, it's a...
And is there cell service?
No cell service or Wi-Fi.
Wow. Okay.
So there is a satellite phone. So the next day I went to the lodge, very teary, and they let me use the satellite phone. I've learned all was well. She just got lost, turned around. No side roads were used, and it was, you know, whatever. We had a magical time, though, and it really was lovely. You know, once we knew that everyone was safe, and it's crowded. So that was my number one takeaway was, you know, thinking back. I mean, I do remember this isolated location being pretty quiet. It was packed. I mean, every single place you could be on the side of this lake was filled with people. Still, we got out in our boats. My girls, they all have their own boats. They have their own kayaks. And so it was quite lovely. And so let's read a little bit about it. So Lost Lake is approximately 3,140 feet on the northwestern flank of Mount Hood, and it's one of the most prominent peaks in the Cascade Range. The lake was formed by glacial activity during the last ice age about 12,000 years ago. As the glaciers advanced and retreated, they carved out the basin that would eventually become Lost Lake.
The surrounding area is characterized by volcanic rock, primarily andesite. I'm not sure if I'm saying that right, which is a testament to the region's volcanic past. Mount Hood, a stratovolcano, last erupted in the 1780s and remains an active, though currently dormant, volcano. The lake is unique in that it has no visible outlet. That's weird. Its water level is maintained by combining snowmelt, rainfall, and a complex underground drainage system. So is it cold?
It's very cold.
Ooh, I like that.
Yes, but no springs, right? So it's not bubbling up out of the ground like you would normally see. And during the summer, the lake's water level does fluctuate. And so sometimes revealing, this says, a dry lake bed where the water is drained into subterranean lava tubes. I haven't seen pictures of that. And this phenomenon has given Lost Lake its name and adds to its mystique. The area does also have deep cultural significance for indigenous people, including the Multnomah, Wasco, and Warm Springs tribes. For thousands of years, the ecosystem provided food, medicine, and materials for those communities. One thing we learned, though, because my first question at the lodge after using their satellite phone and being, you know, upset that my friend hadn't made it, I said, does this happen? And the man working the counter said, people usually don't get lost, but they come to the wrong one. Mm-hmm. I was like, how many Lost Lakes are there in Oregon? And because I thought there was just a couple. There are 19.
That's amazing.
19 Lost Lakes. And so, again, with only seven cabins, they do have a little tiny lodge, too, which I think has five rooms. And there's a campsite as well. Mm. But it's full. It's all full. They just send you away.
So, see, I would have predicted Lost Lake, like somebody got lost there.
Right.
I'm amused that it's because there's lava tubes and the water kind of disappears from time to time.
Mm-hmm. And amazing. It is idyllic. I mean, it was perfect for kayaking, and the kids got in and swam. It was 90 degrees. So it was pretty hot up there.
So are there fish in the lake?
There are. There's quite a few fish, lots of trout. So we did see people fishing as well. Okay. Yeah. And then after that, I treated myself to Timberline Lodge. We stayed just one night at Timberline Lodge after getting all hot and sweaty on our little adventure. But I've always wanted to stay there. I've never stayed there. Again, it was someplace we visited when I was younger, and Mark and I have visited as well, but we have never stayed. So I brought the girls there, and I fell in love.
I was amused because you know that it was featured
in
The Shining, the movie The Shining, and that's what makes The Shining an Oregon film, even though there's only about 4 minutes of screen time for Timberline Lodge or Oregon.
And it's exteriors only.
Exteriors only, but you sent me amusing photos.
I did.
It took me about 30 seconds to realize, because you had something like, Jack's not here. Good luck. Glad Jack's not here. And I had to think about it. And then I realized, Timberline Lodge.
Yes. And so
she's at Timberline Lodge.
In the movie, you know, they make it feel like you walk into Timberline Lodge. And it does look very similar in the movie and then there. They did take out that number. So the room that he stayed in does not exist.
Yes.
I mean, how horrible would it be, though, if you're just Googling Timberline Lodge? And you did have that terrible number.
You did.
I mean, it's a horror film if you haven't seen The Shining.
They would never not have that room rented.
Oh, you think so?
Oh, my gosh. Everybody'd want to stay. All right.
But I love the history of Timberline Lodge.
And they ought to do, too. Oh, my gosh. And free, if you're listening, Timberline Lodge, you ought to have, like, a convention for twins.
Oh.
Because the two little girls in the movie.
Oh, my God. Terrifying. Jeez. Okay. I'm just fascinated. It's a very, very beautiful and stunning architecture. And it was constructed in 1937, and it stands on the south slope of Mount Hood at an elevation of 6,000 feet. It's a beautiful 55,000 square foot structure, rises out of a pristine alpine landscape, and is still being used for its original intent, a ski lodge and mountain retreat for everybody to enjoy. It's a tribute, though, to the rugged spirit of the Pacific Northwest and was declared a National Historic Landmark in 1977. It is one of Oregon's most popular tourist attractions, drawing 2 million visitors a year.
That's incredible. In 1929, the stock market crash sent the United States into the Great Depression until 1939 or so. Workers in the country were desperate for jobs due to a high unemployment rate, coupled with a poor economy. President Franklin D. Roosevelt created the New Deal, which consisted of several social and economic programs, such as the Works Progress Administration, the WPA, and one of my favorites, the Civilian Conservation Corps, the CCC. These programs provided relief through public employment and funded the majority of Timberline's construction.
Now, this funding was the catalyst that started the creation of the ski lodge, originally envisioned by several groups, including Jack Meyer of the Mount Hood Development Association and Francis E. Scotty Williamson Jr. of the USFS. Emerson Griffith became the Oregon's WPA administrator and obtained funding for the WPA for $246,893, with additional funding from Mount Hood Development Association. Gilbert Stanley Underwood was referred as the Parkitect and is famously well known for designing several prominent National Park Service lodges, including Bryce Canyon Lodge, Zion Lodge, and Yosemite's Awahani Lodge. Described as the standard for architecture on public lands, his rustic style was characterized by natural local materials and a design that blended into the landscape. His original design for the lodge focused on a central headhouse, which holds 800,000-pound great stone chimney, and the headhouse is flanked by two uneven wings where the dining room, guest rooms, and other facilities are located.
William Turner, Forest Service architect, used this term Cascadian architecture to describe the design of Timberline Lodge because the roof line with the steep pitch of the headhouse roof mimicked the nearby peak of Mount Hood. The overall design, combined with the use of regional native materials, created Cascadian architecture. The first phase of the lodge was to frame and roof the lodge in 4 months' time. Isn't that amazing?
Yes.
Considering the altitude of 6,000 feet, the short summer season, and harsh alpine climate, this project was a challenge.
So daily, there could be anywhere between 100 and 470 workers on site. The WPA program aimed to employ and train as many people as possible. As a federal arts project and master apprentice program, an additional purpose of the lodge project was to purposely pair skilled artists and craftspeople with unskilled workers so as to teach them traditional skills in arts, crafts, and construction trades. Wages were 90 cents an hour for building trade laborers, 75 cents an hour for common laborers, and 55 cents an hour for the unskilled laborers. Two important objectives of the WPA were to develop independence through training and to encourage private enterprise. In 1976, Smith remembered, carpenters became cabinet makers, blacksmiths became art metal workers, and sewing women wound up expert drapery makers.
Construction of the lodge was completed in 15 months.
Unbelievable.
Isn't that amazing? On the morning of September 28th, 1937, President Franklin D. Roosevelt, the First Lady, and an entourage of 90 arrived at the lodge to be greeted by an assemblage of 1,200. He dedicated the lodge, proclaiming that Timberline was a monument to the skill and faithful performance of workers.
Timberline officially opened for overnight guests in February of 1938. In 1939, the Magic Mile chairlift is constructed. It is the first chairlift in Oregon and the second chairlift in North America, ushering in a golden era of skiing on Mount Hood.
I had no idea the chairlift was that old and right? That it was the second in the country.
Yeah. And it was, it wasn't quite, the Magic Mile chairlift was not open when we were there. It was opening just a couple days later. So it's summer only. But that lift ascends to its top terminal building at 7,000 feet that has since been converted into the now historic Silcox Hut. The U.S. entered World War II on December 7th, 1941. This prompts a forced closure of Timberline Lodge as the country braced for difficult times.
Yeah, but the lodge reopened in 1945 after the war, but management of the lodge proved challenging. So on February 17th, 1955, the United States Forest Service shuttered Timberline Lodge again due to mismanagement and failure by its management company to pay its bills. Gambling and prostitution had found their way into the lodge just before the closure. So that's why you went. Richard L. Kohnstam convinced the Forest Service that Timberline deserved one more chance.
He's an unlikely candidate for the position as his background was outside the hotel business, but his energy and tenacity won out. And on May 28th, 1955, he was accepted by the Forest Service as the new operator for the lodge and ski area. So it took months of cleaning, and it reopened in July of 1955. It has 70 rooms, so it's still quite small.
So you stayed in the lodge. Did you eat at the restaurant?
Yes, there's multiple restaurants. Yes. There's two in the lodge. Hmm. We ate at the pub, which is a little, or no, there's actually three in
there's kind of like a formal one.
Yes, there is a formal one.
That was fun. Renee and I did that.
I think I would do that with one other adult, yes, not children.
I would not waste the money on kids.
Exactly. I mean, my kids would have done fine, but...
they serve different courses as well.
Yes. Yeah. Actually, even at the pub, my daughter ordered chips. Mm-hmm. Just that's all she wanted. And they brought them out like displayed on a plate, like beautifully. And she was like, oh my gosh, we're looking up at the mountain. But it is quite stunning. I mean, there are so many day hikes that you can do right there at the lodge that are very easy. And then, of course, there are harder ones because you can just climb straight up. But then there were day skiers. So the day skiing lodge and parking lot were full every single day. So people were taking a lift up to the where they can ski, and then they'd skied all the way down to the lodge. There was one little path that still existed.
And in the middle of summer, is the big fireplace going? Is there a fire going?
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Yeah. It's massive. It's amazing.
Yeah, it was going. And there's no air conditioning at Timberline either. You know, so we're coming from being really hot, but it, you know, it's a very pleasant temperature up there. But I mean, it's just the 360 degrees. I think that my girls didn't appreciate all of the craftsmanship that was really put into it. I mean, it's just such a beautiful structure.
Everything about it. I mean, the metalwork, you know, what we just talked about, the attention to detail, and we want certain rugs and carpets, and we want all the chairs to be something, and just that they thought through all of this, that it all goes together.
Right. And there's lots of they aren't coffin corners. This is what I need my museum friend, Jan, but they had, it's like canoe corners and canoe doors. So I'm sure there's a different term for that, but it's throughout the entire place. And even in some of their furniture, but everything's just very hardy. Lots of places just to sit and
now,
look.
Have you ever skied there, or was this?
I haven't, but okay. Mark has. Okay. I don't ski. Mm-hmm. I like to find the lodge, like Timberline.
And that's it. See, I would be fine going with a bunch of people that want to ski, and I'll just sit in the lodge.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Carly was very excited about the thought of being able to ski in the summertime, which we weren't doing on this trip, but you know. We had to limit our adventures.
Little daredevil.
Exactly. But it's such a neat history and really a testament to the way they built that beautiful property.
Yes. It's amazing. All right. Well, that was our commercial for visiting Lost Lake and Timberline Lodge.
Go find a park.
Go make some history. And we'll catch you next week. Thanks for listening.
Thank you for joining us for an adventure in history. An Adventure in History is created and produced by the Clatsop County Historical Society and brought to you by KMUN.